Remember when you were starting your career or starting something fresh? Or maybe you're starting now and it was exciting and new and you were learning and growing. You also thought that the company and your manager would help you guide your career path. Well, how's that going? My name is Todd Doherty and I host a podcast called Manage Me. I have 30 years of client, product, and operations experience from startups to retail to Fortune 100 companies. Listen in as I share real-world stories of business and life with solutions you can use. I'll have occasional fantastic guests that will share their insights as well. Come join me and learn real-world guides on how to be the most successful you and manage you. That's Manage Me Podcast and managemepodcast@gmail.com. Okay, welcome back, Manage Me team. Continuing season three of hearing from coaches across my ever-extending network of relationships. It's just been an awesome season where I really wasn't sure how it was going to go. I do have a number of coaches and mentors and community builders that I work with, but through them, I'm getting introduced to more and more people. And really special person today that I have on the podcast. He is the founder and listener, which I can't wait to hear more about that, of a really cool organization called Empathy Lab. He has a great blend of psychology and industrial design, which is just a really unique blend. And you'll hear more about how he's executing on that. But I am welcoming and thrilled to have Shelton Davis here on the Manage Me podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. I'm excited to have you on here. And, you know, we got connected through Teresa and we actually ended up on a, I'm going to call it a little bit of a training that she held. And I hadn't made the connection that she was connecting us. And then when we talked, I'm like, I know Shelton from somewhere, finally connected. And we had a great, what I call pre-pod session, where we just kind of connect, make sure that we even want to get on a podcast together. Does it make sense? And like literally from minute one, I was like, yes. I love this guy. He's so cool. So tell me a little bit, tell me and the Manage Me podcast audience here, tell me a little bit about yourself. I did a very cursory explanation of who is Shelton, but tell me a little bit about yourself and where you come from.
Yeah, let me just thank you. Let me reiterate something you said earlier. You've been doing this podcast for a while, and then the connections start being made, and you're introduced to new people. It's the snowball rolling thing. Yeah. It's a fantastic phenomenon that we don't lean into as a person, as a community. So kudos to you for continuing this. Yeah,
it really is cool. And you know, a couple friends I know are like, how are you, full-time job, family, podcast, coaching? Like, and I'm like, yeah, but the cool part about it is you get to meet these really awesome people. And selfishly, I learn from them. And then unselfishly, I get to help them if I can. And so that's what I really love about this is, you know, meeting folks like you, really cool, have awesome conversations. I learn. I mean, I don't know if you saw me. I was taking notes like crazy when we were, and I, you know, that whole weekend I was looking up things that Shelton said, you know, and so here we are again. I get to do that again. And I hope in this way, also having on the podcast, I learn my Manage Me podcasters learn as well, but also I hope I can somehow connect you with someone here who needs to have the Empathy Lab services.
Yeah. It happens naturally, right? Yeah. You put yourself out there. I'm going to go, you said it earlier. I'm a listener. And so by trade and trial, like I am a researcher in design. And so I hear what people say. And you said a word twice that I want to, it's good. It's good.
Good word. Okay.
You said, and I think you meant it in a negative way, which is not a negative thing. You said selfish.
Yeah.
Right. And part of the thing that I try to help people understand is like the me empathy that the self-care, that's not, that is selfish, and that's a good thing. You have, right. We have to take care of ourselves so that we can be in a good position to take care of each other, right? It's the whole oxygen mask on first in a plane thing. If you don't do that, you can't put it on the person next to you, you know?
So you're 100% agree, Shelton. And it's so hard to learn that, or maybe unlearn the negative behaviors that got you there. Like, I'm being selfish, but you're right.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't put that oxygen mask on, you can't help anyone else. Right. I will say I'm still working on it, as you can tell.
We all are. Yeah.
Right. But I'm learning more and more how right you are about whether it's your mental health, your physical health, your all of those things. If those aren't right, none of it's right. And so many people feel like they need to give those up, their health, their time, their sleep, fill in the blank, right? Yeah. Because it's the quote unquote right thing to do for others. And it's actually the exact opposite.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. All right. Well, we can go deeper. Yeah.
Let's rewind. Tell me about, I did a very high level introduction of who is Shelton. Tell me a little bit about tell us who Shelton is more.
Yeah. Shelton is not my real first name. I'll leave it hanging there.
Cool. I didn't know that. Awesome.
Grew up in Southern California. I am currently in Atlanta, Georgia. I moved here in about 2005. Why the move from beautiful, sunny Southern California to here? I studied psychology, as you had mentioned. I have this innate need to understand myself and my brain. I grew up with childhood epilepsy, and with that and medication and sports, I needed to figure out how to regulate myself so that I could perform, not just on the basketball, you know, court or on the track in track and field, but in school. Like, sometimes medicine does weird things to you. So studied psychology to better understand my brain and better understand how I can interact with other individuals. Knew that I didn't necessarily want to do social work, but I knew I needed that background in order to be the helper. As I transitioned out to Georgia, before that, studied a little bit of industrial design at Art Center in Pasadena, and it was like, all right, how can I put this to use? One angle that I was gonna go in was the Peace Corps. Then I met my wife, and then it went from Peace Corps to, like, I found this person that is incredible. So we've made a life here in Atlanta, Georgia, because of Georgia Tech. So Georgia Tech is where I went to school for my master's in industrial design. I had a really big focus, because of the psychology background, on accessibility and usability. So how to watch, observe, research with people that might be nonverbal, not be able to tell you what their pain is or what their problems are. How do I get to better understand the people that are needing something, right? An experience or product. So I did research for this place called the Georgia Tech Research Institute in the Accessibility Lab. Did so many interesting projects, hundreds of tests, probably maybe up to 1,000 people we interviewed and did research with. But this triggered this idea of there's a lot of individuals out there that are relying on designers and engineers to build the future, build the tools that they use. And I have a really important job to make sure I'm doing the right thing for them. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot of innovation that goes into that. Fast forward, get out of grad school, get into the corporate and startup world, pardon me, and use empathy as like a resource to understanding people, translate that into here's what I heard, here's what we can build, here's what we can give them. That process, like, maybe your listeners have heard of it, design thinking, innovation, new idea process, starts with empathize. It's a good process. It's like any tool. Like, if you try to use a hammer to put screws into wood, it's gonna not go too well. And a lot of people use it the wrong way. Right. And that was my big aha moment. While you had a lot of organizations that can throughput an idea through design thinking with empathize with a user or a group of people, they could do that, but they were laden with the inability to empathize with themselves. And they couldn't, they were in a fog. And so executive opinion overrode what you heard from users. And so I kept seeing this internal lack of empathy, this internal both like within team and people, that I was like, I have to focus here. I can build products all day long. There's plenty of great designers out there. How can I make their life better so that they can feel good for themselves, feel good within their teams, and then do the right thing for the people that they're serving, right? And so that's where Empathy Lab is. It's a place where I take kind of design thinking and focus it on teams, on individuals. How do I encourage empathy growth?
So wow, a couple of things I'm like our light bulbs are going off. But first off, one of the I mean, you say it in your bio and you say it personally, I'm a listener, right? I don't know if I know for a fact I've never met anyone who said one of their kind of introductory key traits is I'm a listener, right? I think we all would love to say that, but we're probably not actually. I'm a hearer. You know, hearing is different than listening, right?
Yeah.
I think that's awesome. And now I can see why you do that, right? You're taking listening to like the next level, which is almost asking, in my opinion, I'm saying, making this up in my head, of why. Like, okay, so I'm listening, I'm hearing, or I'm observing, but why is that person doing that? What is causing that? And how can I make that better? Is that a good description?
You're spot on. I think it is why. First, why am I doing the things, right? And then it's why, like, all right, so then I step in the situation. Why is this mix, what's catalyzed here because of how I'm showing up? And so there's a lot of Buddhism in my way of thinking. And so there's a lot of self-reflection and meditation that I try to serve up in a not so foo-foo way so that people can be like, oh yeah, I could do this.
Right.
Breathing, I can breathe.
Right. Well, and the other thing I heard in our discussion here is, and I may not get all the words right here, is in product design, right? There's UX, right? And that's important, but this is like deeper than UX. This is like, you know, UX is with a button that, you know, our studies say the button should be blue instead of green. You're like, okay, but you're like, well, why? Why blue? And is it what color blue and what shape blue? And I don't know, maybe I'm making that up, but that's what I heard from you is continuing on the why, because maybe we tested red and blue or green and blue, whatever I said, green and blue.
Sure.
But we never tested yellow. Like what, maybe it should be yellow.
Yeah. It's interesting. I think that there's, and some, you know, some UXers or designers might kick me for this one, but I think there's a, we have a lot of data. We've been doing this building of websites and products for a long time.
Right.
And so we do know how colors work with people. This goes back to like I remember reading 1950s military manuals on the ergonomics of the cockpit of helicopters and how light affects the pilots of these helicopters. So we have to use these colors within it. So we have all of this color theory data that we don't really have many more decisions to make. So what the decisions we have now are not about shape, size, or even color. It's about what are we trying to make, how are we trying to make them feel, right? If we can make them feel in the right direction that we want them to feel less, and go back to Buddhism, less suffering and more happiness and joy, then hey, we got there. I don't care what the button can be gray for all I care. It doesn't have to be raised. Just make it legible, right? Make it accessible to a mass amount of people. It is really about getting back into, we are humans in relationship with other humans. So how do we create those contacts and those mini bridges or those big bridges in order to be successful together?
And I totally agree. One of the other things I think I heard, or well, I was listening, but I was thinking about my experiences in some of what you're saying, which was product design and go to market and all that stuff. And I was listening to you, and I apologize, I can't remember exactly how you said it, so I'll paraphrase, but it was something along, you know, in the corporate world, sort of teaching people how to think this way. And as you were saying that, I was thinking, yeah, but so many times you get the, we need to launch by this date, we have this budget to hit, like all these other inputs, which obviously are important, right? Businesses are a business to make money. But I imagine, and because I was putting myself in, what if I was a product manager and Shelton was explaining this to me, and I would be, as a product manager, be leaning in going, yes, yes, see corporate, like this is, we need to do this. Our users will get better benefit out of this product or service or solution. But then on the other side, other shoulder, I guess, was, but we have a budget to hit and we have this launch date and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Do you experience that when you're working with companies?
Oh,
how them get over that?
The strain and tension is huge, right? Yeah. Because I always get this wrong, EBITDA, errors before interest, the taxes, amortization, other stuff.
Yep.
Do you know what it is?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You look down a P&L, any small business, big business, like it's all necessary metrics to see the success, the financial success of a company, right?
Right.
What are the metrics for like employee happiness and success? Yeah, we've got some tools involved, like
attrition.
Right. You've got customer satisfaction surveys, you've got internal employee satisfaction surveys, you've got research 360 reviews, all of these right. things. But there are so many pressures, date, budget, time, that push things through. I think the big thing that I try to help them understand is There's two types of pauses. There's a pause for me. Am I meeting my objectives as a person, as a designer, as a project manager? And if those look good, and then we look at like the pause as a group, are we promise this thing to the user, right? We have to be okay with, if we got to get this to market in this budget, these things are not going to happen, right? We're not going to try and shove them in sideways and have a horrible experience. We're gonna do the right by the customer. Because they're trusting us, right? And any company worth their salt knows that once customers lose trust in you, they're not coming back, right? A competitor just picked them up. Thinking of Silicon Valley Bank right now. You hear the big bank run that's going on?
No.
So Silicon Valley Bank, they...
I feel like I've been under a rock. I feel like I gotta do some research now. I feel...
Laura, yeah. So Laura, my wife, she's a certified financial planner. And we talk finances a lot, but Silicon Valley Bank, long story short, and I'm not a financial planner. There's no advice here, everyone. a bank run is when everyone goes to the bank to get their money out, right? And so Silicon Valley Bank is one of the big banking providers for a lot of VC-backed, venture-backed companies. So in Silicon Valley, they're holding millions, if not billions of dollars. And so when you have everyone running to get their deposits out, there's an issue. So then there's a trust issue of that bank. Now JP Morgan Chase and whoever else can be like Bank of America, be like, if they can't do it, we got you.
Right.
And so like, it's really easy to lose trust. And as a corporation, a small company, if you can find the good balance of, am I doing right for myself? And then as a team, are we doing right by our values? Even with the deadlines and the budgets and stuff like that, we still can't push things out, but we have to say it out loud. We're not going to do certain things, or we are going to do certain things, or we're going to hold because we can't meet our mission, our vision, our value objectives. Even if the stakeholders are like, we want money. Well, you'll get money. You'll get more money if we don't piss off of our customers, right?
Right. Right.
We want more of them. So take the time.
Yeah. It, kind of in is somewhat in parallel, at least I'm making it up in my mind that it's in parallel. You and I talked a little bit about Brené Brown and Dare to Lead. Yeah. and my current organization going through that. And one of the most powerful things I've learned from that, and there's so many lessons in the Dare to Lead book, but it's just great that my CEO is just pushing that out across the organization. So there's, and I'm going to say empathy, right? Yeah. For how we work together, et cetera. But one of the most powerful tools that I read it and I used it like the next day was the Brené talks about, she talks about a scenario with her husband, kind of a very minor incident about a ham sandwich of all things. But she says, the way I handled that was I said to him, the story I'm telling myself in my mind is, right? Mm. And it's very disarming because the other approach is, you know, I think you're doing this, right? And now you're kind of attacking that person. At least that person is now defensive versus the story I'm telling myself is blah, blah. You know, you don't want me to make a ham sandwich or whatever. I can't remember what the scenario was. It was very innocuous. It was simple. But I've actually used that or similar expressions just in the last couple of weeks. And it's so powerful because it's like, I realize that I need to be cautious and careful and calculated, not in a negative way, of how I talk to others about sometimes sensitive topics. And it really quickly, I had a person that I was talking with, and one of my pet peeves is being interrupted. Now it happens on occasion. I totally understand it. So it's not that kind of interruption, but it's the intentional, constant, ask me a question, but don't let me answer kind of thing. It gets me really frustrated. And that was happening to me. And I let the person speak. And then I said, hey, what I'm telling myself right now is that you don't want to hear what I have to say. Because when I speak, you're just speaking right over me. So I'm giving you a chance to talk. And interrupted me again, but this one was more acceptable. It was, you know what? I've gotten that feedback before. I really have to be better at it. I really thank you for it turned 180 degrees around, which I didn't expect to be being thanked for telling the person that she was interrupting me. Right. So in a way, as you were describing how you work with teams, and I think that's part of it is, I don't think I'll use your terms too. I don't want to get too fluffy here.
But yeah.
Being able to express your thoughts and your feelings, particularly in the business and corporate world, has been A, challenging, B, difficult personally, C, scary because you feel like there might be repercussions. But having a coach or someone to teach you and show you how to do that without, you know, feeling you can be fired because you express your opinion, right?
Yeah.
That's awesome. And right. That's really kind of what you're saying, right? That's what you do.
Brené Brown's work has been extremely impactful in my focus in how I approach myself and others. And so like hats off to her. I think that Empathy Lab, we've got an empathy community. And then within that community, like, I don't know, every 7 posts about sharing things, one of them has something to do with Brené Brown. So I'm so glad that your CEO is seeing the benefit, even if it's not on her P&L, she knows that it's going to impact not Q2, 3, 4, or 5, it's the impact next year exponentially in the way that you retain people, make them feel seen and heard, and then you attract talent. It's like, oh my gosh, I want to be in this place where they care about me, right? That's where we all want to be.
You know, one of the things that, a couple things. One is, as I started to get into this coaching world, I had 100% imposter syndrome. Like, why would people want to listen to me? What do they care? What do I have to share? Blah, blah, blah. And I actually had a few coaches like, what are you kidding me? You've got 3 decades of all sorts of corporate experience from startup to Fortune 1 companies. Like, you've seen some crap, right? You know, you've seen, I'm gonna use another word, but you know, you've seen some things. And I'm like, yeah, I guess you're right. But one of my my core beliefs as a leader that took me a long time to develop, but once I realized that it was one of my core beliefs, I can't let it go now. I just can't let it go. And I also, I plan and think in threes. I call them triads. But for me, it's people, process, problems in that order, because most of the rest of the world focuses on problems, puts process around it, and then tries to get the right people to work on the process. Mm-hmm. And I just think it's totally backwards. I think you have to get the right people in the right positions, doing the right things. You have to give them the right tools, which is the process and education and training and formats and all those things. Problems don't go away. But if my opinion, and I've seen it work over, again, I should probably not say that I've been in the business for 30 years, but if you focus on the people, the process, and the problems, it's amazing how the problems just become very manageable, easier, not easy, but easier to handle and attack. And when the problems come up, you're like, yep, we got that. We're going to solve it. Not just this one time, but forever. Boom.
Yeah.
Next problem. And I think coming all the way back around, it's all about the people, right? It's all about the people and their engagement and having trust in their team and in their management, et cetera.
Yeah, I love that triad that you share, the people, process, and problems. It's very easy, I think, from a designer, a user experience designer standpoint. A lot of process starts with the problem statement, right?
Yes, right.
So then you're like, oh, so we start with the problem and then we figure it out. And then we go like, hey, is there any engineers that want to help me with this? And is there a project manager, right? It is backwards. I'm reading a book it's the first time listening to a book, called 11 Rings. It is Phil Jackson, coach of Lakers and the Bulls. And it's just a very interesting, he agrees with you. Todd, he agrees with you. It's about the people.
I'm glad Phil feels that way. What an awesome guy, though. That's cool.
He realizes that you focus on the people so that you can create what he uses, the triangle, you know, offense, triangle offense, defense. I'm showing my lack of knowledge. But like you people doing a process are able to not take on problems, but challenges, right? Problems are reactionary, like challenges, like you know they're coming up, because like at least in basketball game, you know that there's gonna be big guys and small guys and fast guys and really, you know, guys that can jump. So how do you deal with that? And even within most corporations, there's not many surprises. You know, there are things that come around that are just like, oh, that's different. But it's not necessarily like there's a purple unicorn walking in the front door.
Right.
I'm with you. That's why the way I train and what I help people practice, because I really believe in, I'm going to add another P there. You got people, process, problems. Maybe part of the process is the practice, right?
I love it.
But keep it to three. Three is 33 and three are my lucky numbers. So
Me too.
That's
awesome.
Oh, yeah?
Totally.
Real quick story. Family, not gamblers. Laura went to, she wasn't in Vegas. She went to a casino somewhere in Phoenix, dropped $3 on 33 and hit on roulette. And I was like, yay.
Oh, that is awesome. That is really cool. Now it has to be the number.
Right. Practice. Practicing for ourselves feels, back to that word, selfish. It does feel selfish, right? Yeah. And it's not a selfish thing. And the only way that we can be in process with others is if we have a process within ourselves, right? Yeah. And if we don't have that, it makes it rough. And part of the part that I think your CEO is doing, having Dare to Lead as a mantra through the organization, is she's giving you and the teams and the people from intern to CEO a common language, which most organizations do not have.
Yes.
And part of the process that if you're an engineering team in an organization, you have a common language that you program against, right? Maybe it's Elixir, maybe it's Ruby on Rails, I don't know. But if you are all in different languages, nothing gets produced, right? It's just a crap show, right? But in being able to give people a common language for themselves that they can share with each other, like I would, like it, within the Empathy Lab community, we ask each other, like, and it is the how are you doing conversation, but it goes a little bit deeper in what's bringing you energy today, and then like what's weighing you down is baggage, right? Okay. And so we kind of help each other be like, all right, I'm coming in with this type of energy, physical, emotional, mental, or spiritual. I'm coming in with these things or lacking of these things, and I have these baggages that I'm hungry, I didn't get good sleep, I'm dealing with family problems, I stubbed my toe, right? And so like with this data as part of a team of energy and baggage, then we'd be like, Shelton's real tired, we have a really big meeting coming up, let me take lead on this conversation that we have with client X so that you can, so we don't put the pressure on you, right?
Right. Yeah.
So go for it.
I was up in New York earlier this week, met my boss. We had a big kind of town hall, and he invited like his boss's boss. So this executive vice president came on, just did who's fairly new to the organization. And at the end of his discussion, he asked the team, asked my boss actually, I can't remember what words he said, but and I don't want to say challenge words. He said, "Hey, Simon, what are your two, I'm just going to call them keywords. What are your two keywords?" Yeah. It's really much, very much like what you just said, like, you know, basically two words of how you're feeling right now, this second. Right.
Yeah.
And it was, I think he said impact. Actually, I think I wrote it down. I think he said impatient and motivated. Right. And those are two words you would never really associate together. And yeah. And then it was like, well, I'm impatient because I've got a lot of work to do today and this week to finish up this week. But I'm motivated because this meeting has been really fantastic to get the group together and really kind of align where we're going and all that stuff. And I was like, hey, that's pretty cool. Like I would not have known that that's where my boss's head was at the moment. And so we're going to figure out how to use that in some of our like meetings, just take 2 seconds and just say, hey, around the room, give me your two words. And yeah. So now, like you said, we know where everyone is and we can adjust to, you know, best we can to that environment that we now are aware of, because we weren't aware of it a minute ago.
Yeah. I'm so grateful to hear that there's this like tactic, this process, right? That you put in place to help people feel seen and heard. And I'm guessing your calendar looks similar to mine, looks similar to Teresa's calendar, that it's just like Tetris all the way down.
Yes.
And it's just like, how do I slot another thing into it? And the one thing that Teresa and I do religiously, even to her, she is incredible. She's processed, she's in learning and development. She knows where we need to go and how we need to get there. Amazing. I throw in the woo-woo at the beginning of every single meeting.
The woo-woo. And, okay.
Right.
What's the woo-woo?
The woo-woo is, I know you just came from another meeting and I have no idea what your state is, right?
Right.
And so if I can give us 5 minutes to check in with our five senses, box breathe for 20 seconds, two word check-in, right? How's, you know, give me one energy, one baggage, either from this week or from your last meeting. And then like giving ourselves space to then transition into the next thing is, that should be part of the P&L. Like, have we slowed down so that we could go fast?
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And there's a word that I love, and I don't think I've said it yet. It's called penultimate. And the framework that I've created is called Empathy Decathlon. I was a decathlete a long time ago, 10 events, 2 days, awesome and hellish at the same time. So it's like counter pulling on both ends. But the penultimate is the step before the last. And so if you kind of like close your eyes and think of the long jump, you see someone running and they jump, right?
Right.
There's so many dynamics happening on the step before the last, before that person jumps off that board, right?
Right.
And that step before the last is you dropping your body and you're slowing down because you need to change the trajectory to go high and far, right? Happens in almost every event, except for the running ones, right? Maybe there's penultimate between hurdles, right? But if we don't, nature has it all the time. If we don't slow down to go fast between meetings or between efforts, then we burn. We just start burning out.
Yep.
We start losing energy and we start gathering baggage.
Yep. Back to the, I call them domino days, but I like Tetris too. But the domino days for me, as I call them, is you just back to back to back to back meetings, right? And no break in between. And so you know, 30 minute meeting and you jump to the next one, 30 minute meeting, jump to the next one, 60 minute meeting. And ideally, right, we wouldn't schedule that way. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. sometimes it is. But I love the, I'm going to steal it and use it. The woo woo, right?
Yeah.
All right. We know that the vast majority of people just came from some other meeting. Probably let's take, mm-hmm. I don't know, 30 seconds up to 60 seconds, whatever it is, reset, because I want you effective in this meeting. Right. Mm-hmm. And the domino, as I call them, is I'm effective the first couple meetings. And my mind is so racing on the last three or four meetings that frankly, I'm not even paying attention to the meeting I'm currently in. And then that causes delay, lack of decision, et cetera. That meeting goes long. And then all of a sudden it's a domino and
yeah.
all the rest of my day is pretty much useless. I'm just in meetings physically, but not mentally. And
yeah.
it's a disaster. I love the, let's just pause. Slow down yeah. to go fast.
Yeah, it's dominoes. Yeah, I love knocking over dominoes, but not in my yeah. life. Like not in my with life. My life, right?
Exactly.
You made me think about like you have kids. How old are your kids?
I have two older kids. They're both yeah. out of college and in
jobs. Oh, they're out. Okay.
And 99% off the payroll. Oh, so close. 99%.
Yeah. I've got two small kids, so 8 and 11, and I get the fortunate, like with my 8-year-old, he's my son, Grayson. If I put things back to back to back for him, he would melt.
Yeah.
Like it just no attention span of an 8-year-old. Yeah. I'm not sure we graduate too far beyond that, right? And
yeah.
so our capacity and our practice might get greater, but it doesn't mean that our brain power is exponentially more every year we get, right? Sure. And so like being able, I've heard things like, and Teresa and I talked about this yesterday, about 45 minute meetings. Right. How do we shorten them so that people can transition to the next one without having to say, I'll be back. I have to take a bio break, right?
Right.
The amount of times I've heard that, I'm like, my God, yeah. where were you? And where are you like, this isn't like, I don't know if you have any surgeons like ER trauma doctors that listen to your show, but I'm guessing it's not that many, which then means that most of our jobs were not an immediate need to do something to save a life. Right. And so then why are we just like jamming ourselves? Because our best work is not done under distress, boredom, or our inability to be mentally present. Right.
You just a light bulb. My oldest daughter is an ER nurse. And so I now have to go ask her. I have no idea how her day, and she probably has no idea because it's not like you have a patient schedule, right? It's whatever car accident or whatever it's coming in the
yeah.
door. But I have no idea. I have to ask her, like, how does that work? Like, you obviously can't be in the middle of some traumatic thing and go, hey, I got to take a potty break. Can you just give me a minute? I'll have to ask her. I have no idea, but you're absolutely right. Like generally most of what we do is not yeah. life or death, right? Now it's for my daughter, it is, but for us, you know, it's interesting. I had a podcast guest a couple of weeks back Carl Salazzo.
Yeah.
Listen to it. It's great. He literally was an intern that I had hired like 25 years ago, maybe even longer. I can't remember. Anyway, we got reconnected. We always were connected, but we got on a podcast and we're talking about things. And it was just, where was I going with this? It was fascinating to just kind of understand like where we have come from.
Yeah.
And, I had another point to that and I totally blanked out on it, but, what was I going to say? I can't remember. Anyway, I'll think of it probably as soon as we cancel it or end this podcast.
But we're going to do something real weird. Hold on. Pause. Breathe.
Yeah.
It might come back. It's okay.
What were we were talking about? Oh, you did. It came back. Thank you. Hilton, you are amazing. We were talking on the podcast. You'll hear us talk about like kind of the old days when COVID, right? And we would have customer meetings. You know, we'd go out and see customers. You know, we'd maybe have a morning meeting, an afternoon meeting, an evening meeting. And now we're working from home or whatever, and we're on not three or four meetings a day, maybe 15 meetings a day, right?
Yeah.
And so, and we're not actually doing more work in some way, but the I'm going to call it being on and being attentive and being focused has gone from, I don't know, let's say at 5 meetings a day to 15 or 20 a day. And it's fill in the blank, frustrating, challenging, exhausting. It's really a way different dynamic than years ago. And I think this is part of the discussion, right? Like how do we manage that together? And I think the first step is recognizing yourself, how you feel when you are going to the next meeting, and can you just do a 4-box breather for just 30 seconds or whatever it is, just to slow down so you can speed up.
Yeah. It's the cortisol. It's like all the things that we start building up over time that literally breaks us from the inside. Right.
Right.
It's your daughter's an ER nurse. Is that what?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like the helper professions, it's the a lot of the data that I use to convince some C-level that you need to be taking care of yourself and each other comes from burnout that happens within hospital data. And so there's an amazing researcher, physician, her name's Dr. Helen Reese. She runs a company called Empathetics, and great book. Why am I forgetting the name of it? Don't recall. I can see the cover, but I don't recall the name of the book.
We'll figure it out. I'll put it in the podcast notes.
Empathy Effect or something like that. But she just like, she goes really deep into what happens if you don't have empathetic pauses and like a practice of empathy in healthcare. Right. You've got not just like in our industries, you get burnout. Right. You do have mental illness that happens, physical illness that happens.
Yeah.
You have like family dynamics start breaking down. In healthcare, you have malpractice, you have death, you have so much. You have a lot of burnout. You have a very high level of suicide with physicians. So it's just like, we have to be doing better for your first of the three, the people, right?
Yeah.
If we don't care for ourselves, we're already seeing the outcome of it, right? Yeah. Now we have the opportunity. Your CEO has the opportunity to do something that's going to put a stamp on the company for the foreseeable future of being truly people first, right? Not like Amazon says, like their customer first. Come on, you're not. You're like profit. How do we continue to gobble the world?
Raise a couple billion more dollars to put some more people in space. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's great because this journey that I'm on at my corporate role is we as my kind of my peers and executive manager, we're talking about, you know, this is a big turnaround for the company and. We're in, like, we can't wait. We think, you know, when we're successful, like, this will be like one of those Harvard studies to say, here was the environment,
yes.
here was the business goal, you know, events are happening, new CEO came in, recognized the culture, put this new, you know, dare to lead practice in place, here were the benefits, and oh yeah, by the way, the business turned around, they're making billions of dollars, right? You know, oh, awesome, right? That's the story.
Tenure is like, if people are staying here forever, they keep coming back to this. They go like, yeah, there's
customers are coming back. Customers aren't leaving, right? When there's a problem, all those things.
Yeah. The high trust metrics, right? It's huge. Speaking of listening, let me go back to something that you said about 25 years ago, intern hired, you had that gentleman back on your show. And then it went from like 5 meetings, going customer to customer.
Right.
Physical from customer to customer.
Yes. Yes.
Probably between the drive from one place to another, you go to like some place, you grab a bite to eat, you go to the restroom. There's no bio breaks. You just, you went with the flow.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And it's interesting. I think there is definite benefit from what we're doing right now. We are, you're north of the city, I'm south of the city, south of Atlanta. Right. We can connect like that. It's amazing. But there's something to be said about being in place together that I don't think research has shown enough validity beyond butts and seats. So you've got CEOs that like, I want people in because I want to see them in their seat. That's really not what it is, right? Yeah. It has nothing to do with butts in the seat. I think it's hearts in a single place, right? It is a spiritual thing that is almost immeasurable, that the results of it, if you can hold community, are going to like do what your CEO is doing. It's going to be exponential, right? But you have to, it can't be come here so I can watch you work.
Totally agree. Changed roles about a year ago, 100% work from home. We have an office about 45, 50 minutes away. I am not required to go into the office, but the general team had decided, hey, let's try to, you know, anybody who can come in on Wednesday, please come in on Wednesday, not mandatory, whatever. And I was, and me personally, so, you know, pre-COVID, 100% in the office, 10, 12, 15 hour days in the office to, you know, whatever that Friday was in March in 2020, when we said, hey, everybody go home for 2 weeks, we'll be back in 2 weeks, right? And I think people forget, that's what we thought. We thought, oh, it'll be 2 weeks, you know, no big deal. And then, you know, 2-3 years later, here we are. And I discovered over COVID that I always wanted to work at home. I always had an office at home if I was sick or if I had some, you know, the AC guy coming, whatever, but I never worked long-term from home. I always thought I wanted to. Yeah, no, that's was not for me. I think especially because my wife is in special ed. And so they were literally the group that was home for 2 weeks and that was it. They were 100% in school because it's special ed. High touch, high attention.
Yep.
So they were the ones, you know, she was home for 2 weeks and then went back and I was still here all by myself. And I realized that like, I'm going into the office every Wednesday and I know my to-do list isn't going to get any shorter on Wednesday, probably get longer, but I felt so much more productive, so much more connected. I'm doing air quotes here on a podcast, but I got more done on Wednesday from a moving things forward with people. I didn't get my to-do list done necessarily, but got the relationships and those sidebar conversations done. Super powerful. I think the challenge is how do you measure that? I don't know if you can. I think if it was measurable, easily measurable, we would have stats and stuff on it to say, you know, being in the office, I'm going to make it up because I don't know, but being in the office 2 days a week is, you know, 65% more productive than folks who are 100% at home. If we could measure it, it would be awesome.
Yeah. I wonder if it's something that is like to your question, is it measurable? And, You can probably count the number of Catholics in the world, right? Or Christians or Buddhists or Jewish individuals that say they practice, right? Or that they are of a religion or a spiritual like following. But I don't think, and I don't have the data. I don't think we measure spirituality
that's true.
In a way that is tangible to business metrics, right? And so I wonder when we're going to realize there's people working in companies and there is like a chaos and a system at play at the same time, and that right. the chaos isn't measurable, but the system is. Yeah. And part of that chaos is this beautiful potential spirituality of people together,
right?
The togetherness makes the outcome. Like maybe it's like we had a lot of people in the office on Wednesdays this past year, and it just so happens that, you know, our productivity levels went up, right? Right. Or we made X amount more money. I don't know what it is in this like amorphous thing of spirituality. I'm not going to try it. Like, I think once we try and measure it, we're going to break it. Right. Awesome. And we just got to just like hold the space for it to be.
Yeah. Allow that energy. I've been using that word a lot lately, like energy.
Yeah.
It seems to be like my default. Like when I don't know exactly what this thing is, I just call it energy, right?
Yeah.
Positive and negative, right? But it's energy. And I think, right, there's an energy when you get people together, and I'm not smart enough to know whether that's like real actual electrical connections that we're bouncing off of each other. I have no idea, but I feel like that's, and it goes both ways, right? You have positive energy and negative energy, but I feel like there's something to that. And I'm not, again, not smart enough to know exactly what it is, but I feel like that's part of it.
Yeah. Bring in something really random. I just thought of this amorphous thing. I think it was Radiolab, another podcast. I don't know if you've listened to it. They did this episode on the transformation of butterflies from, you know, you probably read the Very Hungry Caterpillar book, right?
Yeah.
they eat chrysalis butterfly. And the big mind-blowing thing for them was, oh, so when this caterpillar turns into a butterfly, it's like its legs then form into like this part, right? It goes into the chrysalis, it completely liquefies,
right?
And then it becomes something new, right? Yeah. It's kind of like you look at the egg white in the egg, you're like, what part of this egg white, let's say it's a fertilized egg or this egg period, what part of the egg yolk is the brain and what's the beak, and like you don't know,
right?
And if you went in to try and figure it out, like it's probably, I don't know, I'm not a scientist, not figure outable. Maybe it is so.
Right.
But the reality is, like, I have to trust that this egg that has been fertilized, that we can tell it's fertilized, is going to become a chicken, right? And like if we create the space, the egg, I don't know, for people to come in on Wednesdays, it's going to, like, your to-do list might get longer, like you said.
Right.
But you're going to get so much more heart work, like the contact work done with the people, trust built, that exactly. It's hard to do on Zoom. It's hard to do in Slack or Teams or wherever you're on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Ooh, yep. Absolutely. Sorry, I just hit my keyboard. I hope I didn't hang up on us.
We're still here.
Good. So couple questions for you. So
yeah,
love the conversation. Love what you're talking about. How do you engage with companies? How do companies engage with you on, hey, Shelton, we need your help. We like what you're talking about. We need your help on our journey. Teach us what we're missing, and how does that work for you?
Yeah. So we're still in the realm of a lot of video, a lot of remote stuff. And past year, we tried to do a lot remote, and it was a lot of, I felt like chasing my tail, which is expensive as a small business.
Yeah.
And I think one of the first things, to anyone wanting to change, right? Like whether you have a habit, or you want to like learn how to like crochet, is to agree with yourself that I want to go do this thing, right? And I think that one of the first things, especially from an executive level, is I have to hear someone say, like, I want to do this.
Yeah.
Like I feel, if not see, a future that we can be, that I believe we were, but we're not. We want to go there. Can you help us get there? And yep. That's some of the first conversations. And so like, it's, I'm, you have to show up, right? That's the first thing. What was the other part of your question here? How do they find us? What do they do?
Yeah. Well, so how do you work with companies? How should, you know, hopefully there's someone here that's like, this is ringing with me. I got to act on this. How do I get in contact with Tilton? How does that process work?
Perfect. Thanks for the reframe. Sometimes the brain and the mouth are like at two different speeds, right?
I say that all the time. I warn people. I'm like, I'm thinking and talking at the same time. This may not come out as I hope.
Love it. So there's three things that we do. We really believe in practice, and that's kind of like our, like ethos. Like this is a practice. Empathy is not, there's not, we're not practicing to be perfect. We don't believe in perfection. We believe in better humans. And so if we can help people practice in any way, shape, or form that they can show up at, great. We know that certain corporations don't have an appetite for it. They might not have they might have just fired their entire DEI program. Their head of HR is really just putting out fires because of what's happening. Sure. And so we've got team training. If the appetite is there, we can do some type of like either lunch and learn to kind of wet the whistle and give them an overview and be like, this is tip of the iceberg. You know, the big stuff is underneath the water.
Right.
Sometimes that turns over a more longer term engagement where we get to practice with, right? This is not like we know your business or we know your people. It's like, how do we help understand your business and people so we make this work for you? Utilizing the framework that we have, we take them through the steps, right? And so a 1 hour, 2 hour engagement can turn into longer multiple term engagement. The sweet spot that I think the most, that is most beneficial for organization is anywhere from like, and it sounds like bonkers, 6 to 8 weeks of like, we're going to go through each skill and learn how to build them on top of each other so that you actually build the foundation.
Right.
And that goes through the entire empathy decathlon that takes people from energy and baggage for me empathy all the way through how do we want to give feedback and lead people in our organization. And there's usually a lot of things in place in order. Well, I say usually. Sometimes how we give feedback, 360 reviews once a year, need more, right? And so like we help them understand how many, how much do your employees want? How often is it so it doesn't become like a big fire, a big source of anguish and like a scared fear if you do it once a year.
Yep.
So companies that don't, there's like, I ain't doing this. It's too woo-woo, too foo-foo. Right. We've had companies come up and say, please, can you not say empathy in front of our people? I'm like, what are you going to change the name of my company? lab. So
I work on the lab. We're here.
Right. We're here to help with lab stuff. There's companies that are just like, they're either old school or they're fearful of the change that will be produced that will potentially out them as leaders.
Right. Yep.
Which then means you have people underneath. Like if you think of this as a sandwich, like you've got the leadership, like your leader is bought in, but then you have to like, there's probably hundreds, thousands within your company. If she didn't buy in, there's probably thousands of people that would want Brené Brown to come and talk to them.
Right.
She's right. Real expensive, right? Yeah. And so the one thing that we've been creating is this empathy athlete community where individuals can show up and go through the training. Your company's not going to do it,
right?
And your company's not, your HR doesn't have the budget or doesn't want to buy in or wants to go somewhere else, but you believe in what Empathy Lab is doing in the me empathy and we empathy. We have a small and growing community where individuals come together. Some small teams come together to practice the things that their company just won't take the leap on
or haven't bought into. And so the individual can learn about all these practices and techniques and stuff. And listen, if they bring it back to their company and help there, awesome for the company. Great.
Free,
the individual is helping the company, which is awesome. But whether that individual brings it back to company or uses it for the rest of their lives in other companies or other organizations, it's still awesome for that individual or those small teams to know this and be able to practice it.
You got it. Yeah. It's if I can't go top down into the organization,
right.
How can I go like multi up? Right.
Yeah.
And so it's I realize that if I am for your first of the three, if I am for the people, I have to have something for the people, even if the organization hasn't turned their ship or are ready for it.
So best way, is it email,
yeah.
web?
Yeah. So text?
I'll put it in the podcast notes too.
Yeah. Obviously. Keep it simple. Empathylab.io is the website. My name's Shelton, Shelton, at empathylab.io. Email me directly. Maybe even mention this podcast. So I'm like, all right, one-to-one. And
yeah.
I'll definitely always respond. Those are the two best ways.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Couple questions for you before we wrap this up. You dropped a bomb on us first thing on this podcast, and you said, Shelton is not my real first name.
Yeah.
Are you willing to share your
actual first name? I certainly can.
Or is there a story behind there?
There's a little story behind it.
Okay.
Yeah. So we'll give it quick. Maybe this kind of is a little more, a bigger window into why empathy, why me. My mom was born in, it's now the DRC, the Democratic Republic of the Congo.
Oh yeah.
So Zaire at the time, and she is the child of two missionary parents, and she lived in the heart of the Congo, Mboso Bele, Kinshasa, Wema, number of other places growing up. So she was this brunette, blue-eyed little girl in the middle of Africa. So if we talk about like the flip of who's the minority,
right.
She was completely out of the game, right? But she was loved. She was cherished. And when she finally moved back here to the States, because there was a war and turmoil happening in Zaire at the time, she got here in 68, 67, 68. So height of the civil rights movement.
Right.
And so she got back here and realized that she couldn't, in the area, Southern California, there was still like, it was still decently, you know, not segregated, but like you have the line, you have the invisible line.
Right.
You hang out with white people, you hang out with black people.
Yep.
And so she grew up around Africans, right? And then you had African Americans in the United States she wouldn't be friends with, and it just tore apart that she couldn't be friends with them.
Wow.
So the legacy of some of her, her growing up translated into my first name that I had for the first three years of my life. So my first name is Bashir, and my middle name is Bulongala, and last name is Davis. So Bashir Bulongala Davis.
That's hard for me to say. I
yeah,
have to practice I'll, that one a couple times.
Yeah, Bashir is a pretty popular like Arabic name. It's more popular in Northern Africa.
Okay.
So Bashir, but the middle one, I'm still trying to figure out what the meaning is, because I know Bashir is the bringer of good news. And
okay.
Then Bolo, Bologala, Bologala, middle name. Jury's out. I need to find some Central Africans to help me understand my middle name.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where did Shelton come from?
So many names. And this is I think it's a joke, and I don't know. My mom passed away a couple years ago. Thank you. So my name's Shelton. My dad's name is Elton. My grandfather's name is Alton. So
okay.
Maybe it's like the junior thing, but we just kind of change it.
There you go.
My brother, half brother, Jamal, was very upset. I remember as a kid, he wanted to be part of the Eltons. And so he wanted to be called Melton. And we're like, we can't call you Melton, because the kids at the playground, especially in Phoenix, Arizona, are going to make fun of it. So
that's great. That's classic.
Shelton J. It says J period on my birth certificate, but I don't usually period means. It's abbreviated, right? It's
right.
An initial.
I think, yeah.
I'm like Homer J. Simpson. I don't think it means anything. I get to make it up.
Well, That's awesome. You get to make it up. That's like the best thing ever. That is cool. I'm glad you shared that. That's an awesome story, and that you know that Dashir is bringer of good news. Is that what
bringer
that means?
Of good news. Yeah. Bringer of
good news. That's really cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
I have to say another name that we mentioned several times. I have to give her credit for introducing us. Teresa M. Ward.
Teresa Ward. Awesome. Yes.
You mentioned her. I mentioned her. She also connected both of us. Just awesome. Also culture and communications and kind of a whole development expert. So
she's amazing. She helped. She's lead facilitator for Empathy Lab. She helped in this past year, helped me train 6 other Empathy Decathlon facilitators so that we can spread out over the United States and teach empathy wherever we can and our people are willing to listen.
That is awesome. I think it's my last question, and this is new, and I've stolen it from another podcast, but my name of my podcast is Manage Me. Manage Me Coaching is my business practice. And what it means to me, maybe I shouldn't tell you this before I ask you this, but I'm going to me, and some people see it as manage me, like I'm going to manage them. And it's not the whole idea of this practice is I'm helping them manage them. Right. Mm. No one is going to manage you better than you. Kind of coming full circle to our whole intro of the podcast is, you know, the oxygen mask, right? You got to take care of yourself first. So that's a lot about in a different way, not maybe in an empathetic way that I was thinking, but more around how do you manage your life, your career, your business, et cetera. And you got to start with you. But when you hear manage me, what does that mean to you?
Oh gosh, you're asking me to define words, and it's this is where the brain goes everywhere. I wrote down it earlier, feed forward. We always talk about feedback, and when I hear manage me, I feel like it's a forward momentum of like a collaborative effort to manage ourselves, like better, differently.
Yeah.
And I think it's less of it's an exchange, right? It is a fruitful exchange of ideas around how to both lift ourselves and support each other in their lift.
I totally agree. Yeah, there is no right or wrong answer here. In a similar way to what you're doing with Empathy Labs, I'm trying to do and help people and coach people on, you know, managing their own lives and careers. And so I hope we can continue to work together. I loved this podcast. Thank you for sharing all that you did. And look forward to maybe having you back and hearing all the success that you've had with your growing practice here. Thank you for listening today. Really appreciate you spending time with me. Hopefully you learned something. I want to remind you that I want to hear from you. So if you have a question or input, remember, go to manageme.godaddysites.com or email me at manageme.podcast@gmail.com. On the website, you'll be able to submit a voice recording, something that you want to hear, something that you want to have on an episode. And I want to hear from you. I want to hear about your topics, your guests, your input, your feedback. Hopefully good, but also bad. Talk to you soon.